Госдума приняла закон о запрете пропаганды
гомосексуализма. Госдума сегодня впервые рассматривает законопроект, вокруг которого давно кипят страсти.
По проблеме и пропаганды гомосексуализма среди несовершеннолетних.
В Государственной Думе сегодня первое после каникул пленарное заседание.
Депутаты уже вернулись с перекура и снова приступили к работе.
Здание Госдумы, где сегодня в первом чтении будет обсуждаться...
The government appears increasingly irrelevant. The prime minister is publicly ridiculed on a regular basis. The parliament seems to get more outlandish by the day. The bureaucracy behaves like a protection racket. And nobody trusts the courts. We've long argued in this podcast that Russia is not in fact governed by its formal institutions, but rather by an informal collective leadership led by Vladimir Putin. Things like the cabinet of ministers and the state Duma were simply part of a facade that carried out the will of a deep state run out of the Kremlin. And until recently, they did so pretty effectively. But in the past year, and particularly in recent months, the mask has come off, the facade has become worn, and is increasingly showing cracks. Russia's deep state appears to be intact under the leadership of the so-called collective Putin, but its formal institutions increasingly resemble a fake state, an empty shell with no authority. Hello, and welcome to the Power Vertical Podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me in Prague is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin, of RFERL's Russian service. Welcome, Kirill.
Hello.
Kirill, let's start with the Duma. When the Putin system was working well, it was often said that it should simply change its name to the Ministry of Implementation. In other words, it was not an independent, deliberative, legislative body, but an appendage of the Kremlin that passed laws it was ordered to pass. But recently, the Duma has taken up and debated laws dealing with everything from blasphemy to so-called gay propaganda, to banning foreign words from the Russian language, to barring dual citizens from appearing on state television. All these things weren't passed, of course, but meanwhile, the reforms of the social welfare system, of the education system, the Kremlin says it wants, appear to be going nowhere. What does this reflect? Has the Duma gone off the reservation? Is it getting conflicting signals from the Kremlin? Is this just some kind of elaborate show, some good old-fashioned Russian pakazuka that masks a deeper agenda? What do you see happening here?
First of all, it's a very interesting situation because what we see now, if we start with Duma, Duma is stamping or printing one by one very strange, I'm speaking very mildly, yeah? Very strange legislation about everything in the world. There is no any hint of legislative agenda or political agenda in this choice of and objects of this legislation. It's smoking. It's a more strangest thing in the legislative practice of post-Soviet Russia. It's anti-gay gay propaganda and so on. At the same time, this is a absolutely disastrous so-called anti-Magnitsky bill, which affects, tens of thousands Russian orphans, mm-hmm. and so on. And everything is on the same level of understanding, so without any understanding from the Russian MPs. First of all, I think, I'll begin with a strategic statement. All these things shows that the only one real enemy of Russian state is Russian state itself. First of all, Russian Государственная Дума, State Duma. Because when we speak about, so-called real states, real countries, not in, American sense of the world, real guys and so on, but states as a mechanism which can really, works. Mm-hmm. We see that, of course, any especially democratic state is a combination of various interests, of various social and political groups. And the art of politics is to keep all these interests in some balance. Mm-hmm. And that is the real, definition of this field of human activity. And when we speak about legislation in democratic countries and so on, we can say that legislation, of course, it can be reasoned by some personal or pragmatic interests of various social groups, but into their brackets or some limits of a state interest. Of this interest, not just a whole society and so on, but the state itself as a body.
Mm-hmm.
And which the thing which we see now in this all this activity of Государственная Дума, State Duma, is they don't even understand their real or just any interest of Russian state as a body. They can use, they use, still use, and I think they will use all this legislation, all this, words about democracy, about security and whatever, just as the tools in a very pragmatic activity, which is a very short-lived.
What do you think they're trying to do? I mean, first of all, do you assume there is a larger agenda behind all of this? And if so, what is that agenda?
There are two versions of reality. First version is, I love it. It's, this new mocking name of Государственная Дума, Mad Printer, or printer which ran amok.
Uh-huh.
So because Государственная Дума looks like a really crazy printer which is printing everything, just without any understanding what it's doing just now.
In fairness, there's a couple of laws that seem. I mean, I would argue the smoking law is not an outlandish thing to take up. They're also due to take up legislation on domestic violence this next month, which is long overdue in Russia and which is a legitimate problem in Russia. But other than that, I mean, these laws about they haven't passed these bills that have been floated out there about barring foreign words from the Russian language, barring dual citizens from Russian state television channels, the infamous so-called gay pop propaganda legislation, the stuff we saw late last year on blasphemy that was in the Duma. Do you see a method to this madness?
Let's begin from the outcome of this activity, because, of course, you mentioned several very important things. Especially this anti-smoking legislation and the legislation about domestic violence. But the problem is that in the context of numerous senseless legislation about other things,
mm-hmm.
all these very important things, they just lost their importance because nothing is important in this context. It's just, lexic garbage, and that is all. It's not a real legislation because fundamentally the basis of any legislation is an attitude of the society to the legislative body.
And the ability of the state to enforce said legislation.
Or the ability. And now Russian state and Russian society lack both of these things. That's why I'm speaking that very important in some sense, of course, legislation about smoking or about domestic violence means in the context of modern lawmaking, nothing.
Because it gets thrown in with all this garbage.
Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, presumably, we'll have a law on smoking that, presumably will, in the long term be beneficial for the health of Russian citizens. And in the long term, we'll presumably have a law on domestic violence if they ever get around to passing it, and that will save thousands of lives at least if it's ever enacted. But these things are happening amidst all this, and I can't think of a better word for it than silliness. But yet
you say not me.
there does, I think, seem to be a method to this silliness. Whether we could debate the merits of that method itself, but I think what's going on is that they're trying to construct a new Putin majority based on the most conservative elements in society. I think they're picking issues, and this is not, again, there was a great article along these lines in Novaya Gazeta this past week. They seem to be picking specifically things that outrage the kind of creative class, if you will, the progressive elements of society, but yet which resonate with the more conservative elements in society. Everything from the anti-gay bill to foreign words in the Russian language to the even the anti-Magnitsky bill, which did resonate with some sections of society. Some polls show a majority favor, although I'm not sure I believe these polls. I'm not sure. I believe those polls.
Yes. Nevada Center told that just the society is divided.
But what they seem to be doing is trying, because the old Putin majority, as Pavlovsky used to call it, the old Putin majority was based on a social contract in which you trade political freedom for economic prosperity. The more advanced part of society has outgrown that contract now. They want more than just prosperity. And even so, economic growth is declining, and therefore the prosperity is not what it once was. They felt the need to construct a new Putin majority, especially after the events of last December and January with the massive protests. And they're trying to build that majority, although I don't think it's a majority. Among the most conservative elements, and these are just signals to society to get their base. We would say in American political terms, to get your base riled up. What's happening though is it's not working, but yet the silliness continues. It's almost like the silliness must go on, and it doesn't show any signs of stopping. And in the process of using the state to create this new Putin majority, it seems to be discrediting the state itself. Would you?
Yes, but I can't agree with this article in Novaya Gazeta because I am not...
You read it, Rogov's piece.
Yes, I know. I know Kirill Rogov very well and his latest, you know, pieces of journalism.
In search of a Putin majority.
Yes. I cannot agree with this. And that is because, first of all, how can anyone who is, you know, inside Kremlin administration or some political expert who is working for Putin or Volodin and so on, how can he combine the idea of Russian conservative majority with the idea of quitting tobacco, of...
I don't think those are part of the plan.
Usually, all these things about smoking, domestic violence, and so on, it's a part of an agenda of this conservative majority of Russian people. But it's not that they oppose smoking or domestic violence. They support them. So I can read all this legislation as an act of hostility against this conservative majority, if we can speak about this. If we return to,
See, there's a contradiction between the rational laws and the silly laws.
Yes, and the silly ideas about what Russian is, in you know, really, yes. Because all these people who work for Kremlin administration now, they don't have any, you know, the slightest idea about Russia, provincial, regional Russia today. They think about them as, Russian version of Iran. So it's those who against smoking, who against drinking vodka, who against everything. No, the majority is a poor part of the population, which is deeply into smoking, domestic violence, and xenophobia at the same time. Mm-hmm. If they want to, you know, be based on this majority, but I'm not sure that that is a majority, really.
I don't think it's a majority.
Yes, they have to pass a bills about promoting smoking, promoting domestic violence, promoting, you know, binge drinking, and so on. And at the same time, in the same context, anti-Magnitsky bill and anti this bill about gay propaganda and so on. That will be a real support or a real, you know, foundation of this new, if it really exists, new Putin's majority.
So, if you disagree with Rogov's thesis,
absolutely.
What do you think is going on?
I think that first of all, partly it's a result of a chaos inside
the deep state,
and especially a so-called formal state.
Mm-hmm. So the chaos inside the deep state is eliciting chaos.
Yes, because this is the fake state,
as we have come to call it.
Because this is, in my opinion, this is an outcome of previous years of growing. Of the growing of the informal part of the, you know, the state, of the deep state, and the decline of a formal state. And that is the result. Silliness. It's not just about, you know, some conspiracy theories and so on. Silly. I'm very sorry, but silly MPs. They pass.
They're adults.
Yes, they pass silly laws. That is the truth.
So the downgrading of the formal institutions.
Yes, downgrading and declining of even the human power of state echelons, in Russia. And that is an outcome of another very important but social problem. The previous years of Putin's regime closed real social lifts, so-called social lifts in the society. And the result is that, the human power of the modern state, state Duma and so on, is very poor in intellectual sense.
And so you're not having as good... When we used to have people of the caliber of a Yavlinsky or a Nemtsov or a Ryshkov...
Sure. And even Pavlovsky and Surkov.
Right. In the Duma or in the Kremlin, now the human capital is less than what it was.
Absolutely. And so this is a very bright picture of a total decline of a state, as a kind of number of various people. And that is very important because the same things we can say in some limits about all Russian, institutions,
right,
which are connected to a formal state.
Well, I want to come back to this point, but before we do, let's move on to the government. When it was formed last spring, commentators noted that Putin was also forming what looked suspiciously like a mirror government in the Kremlin, with aides to the president having almost identical functions to cabinet ministers, right? The assumption at the time was that it would be Dmitry Medvedev's government in name only. And in reality, it would be directed by the Kremlin. But this hasn't exactly worked out. We talked about this in the podcast last week a little bit. Communication and coordination between the Kremlin and the White House appears poor at best. This was illustrated on January 16th when Justice Minister Alexander Konovalov appeared before the Duma and said he was unable to implement the law on NGOs. He couldn't do it.
Sorry for interrupting you, but the same thing is about a lot of laws which was passed or had been passed by State Duma. For instance, all these regulations about internet and so on, they're absolutely unable to implement them.
Yeah, and now you mentioned Pavlovsky. He recently described the government as follows. And now we're talking about the executive branch, not the legislative branch, but... In the current state of suspended animation, the executive branch resembles a mammoth embedded in ice. You can examine it, but you cannot see any movement. We discussed the Duma for a bit. What do you see going on with the government now? And again, in the old Putin system, the government basically did what the Kremlin told it to do. You had a technical prime minister. Remember when Fratkov was prime minister? You had a technical prime minister who carried out. That model has changed, but we assumed when Medvedev became prime minister, he was going to be a technical prime minister. But he seems to be not even that. The government seems to be nothing right now. I mean, what do you think is going on there?
First of all, the situation is very dangerous because with this Duma, we just discussed the abilities of this Duma, the only one, center of, executive power in Russia
is the government.
It's the government. But
the government is the only
center. Yes, yes, yes. But you know, in a Russian context, that's not so. Because government in Russia is not just an executive power. It's partly a legislative power and so on. But when we see such a decline in the government itself, because I cannot remember this Fratkov guy because he was absolutely invisible all those years.
He was trained to be invisible.
Yes,
I know his profession.
And his predecessor was Mikhail Kasyanov, by the way,
who's now in the opposition.
Yes, and what is interesting? So, in the context of all this Putin's regime and so on, usually there were a lot of very good professionals in Russian government, Kudrin and so on.
There still are, though. Dvorkovich is a professional. Konovalov's a professional. Shoigu is a professional.
Shoigu, I'm not sure.
I don't think you have a deficit of talent.
Shoigu,
he is
not Bonaparte. And
but you don't have to be Bonaparte to be a professional.
He is not even a Duke Wellington.
You don't have to be a Duke of Wellington to be a professional. No, I mean, my point is, I take your point about the Duma. The quality of the human capital there is a lot less than it used to be. That is for sure. The government, I'm not sure about that. I think you got some talented people in the government. I think the problem lies elsewhere there.
Firstly, look at the other members of the government, which are the heads of a very important ministry.
I know what you're going to say.
Yes. first of all, this is Medinsky. This is very important.
I knew you were going to mention Medinsky.
Yes, of course, because
I mentioned Dvorkovich. You mentioned Medinsky.
Yes, that
point,
is the game.
Point, counterpoint.
Yes. speaking seriously, because not this, you know, field of culture needs deep reforms. I don't believe in any control of the culture from the state. But the institutions, cultural institutions, which are funded by the government and the Russian state, they terribly need very important reforms.
Mm-hmm.
And what does Medinsky do now? He's undermining any attempt to reform all these institutions, museums, and so on. And that is not just because he's, you know, this nationalist or whatever. Partly that is so. But he's absolutely a very bad bureaucrat. He's just very bad minister. He understands nothing in the field of, cultural institutions in Russia. And that is the answer. Another example is Ministry of Education
where Livanov. Reforms are badly needed.
Yes, reforms are badly needed, and Livanov is not the worst person to be a head of such ministry. And in some proposals, I focused on them several days ago because it's very interesting. What are they proposing? Because the situation in this field of education is very bad, extremely bad. And what do we see? Several proposals are very good. I cannot, reject several ideas about this and this and this. But all this stupidity of state institutions, all this very strange situation around the government, all this lack of power inside the government, all these things lead to inability of Livanov to make these reforms.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is just laughing at him because let's try to reform Russian humanitarian university RGGU.
Mm-hmm.
The first move of RGGU when they heard about the ideas of reforming them was what? To sign some kind of agreement with the FSO, Federal Security Office of Kremlin, about some, joint projects and so on. And that was like they just found another one, Krisha.
Right. Mm.
So when we speak about Krishas in the field of a very high quality educational and scientific institutions like RGGU and so on.
Russian State Humanities
Yes,
University.
And that is the end. And that is really the end. That is not, you know, it's not fun. It's very serious. That's why I'm speaking that the ability of doing something of Russian, modern Russian, contemporary Russian government had been undermined in the very beginning of its existing now in May.
What I think we see going on here with the government, we have almost the worst of all possible worlds, because when we look at the old system, when Fradkov was prime minister, when you had the so-called technical government, you're right to point out he was invisible. He was supposed to be invisible. But what he also did was he very effectively, and his ministers very effectively, carried out the will of the Kremlin. It wasn't democratic, of course, but nobody ever accused Russia of being democratic under Putin. But it was effective. It worked. What you have now, and the government was weak, but it was supposed to be weak. Now you have a weak government, but because of the divisions within the elite, because of the divisions within the deep state, you have a weak government that's not taking orders from the Kremlin, but not strong enough to do anything on its own. Does that kind of capture, in your opinion, what we see going on? We have a different problem in the Duma. We have a very different problem in the Duma. The Duma has always been weak, and it's still weak.
I agree.
Not sure if I agree. I might agree with Rogov. I still have to think about that a little bit, whether we see some method to this madness or whether we're just looking at the chaos in the Duma that's resulting from weak personnel there. But with the government, I think I got a pretty good idea what's going on here. Putin, as we said last week or on the podcast, wants to create this, what Minchenko called an American-style system, meaning that the cabinet of ministers is under the president de facto, but he hasn't been able to pull it off, as weak as the government is. And the only explanation, they're not coordinating, they're not cooperating. Well, the reason for that, of course, is the divisions in the elite, because you have a lot of the team that didn't want Putin to come back, people like Dvorkovich, for example, and Konovalov, populating the government. And you have Putin's men in the Kremlin, and this division in the deep state persists. And this, now we're not just talking about stupid legislation. We're talking about the day-to-day governance of the country.
I partly agree with you. Of course, there is a division, a very deep division inside the Russian elite, of course. But I see another one reason in, you know, this recent state of Russian government. Because from the very beginning, this government, from May June, I think, yeah, from the very beginning of this Medvedev's government, it consists not of bureaucrats, well, people, it consists of messages to various, you know, parts of elite and Russian society. And you can't combine the government in this way. Of course, you can include one or two popular or very unpopular minister to your government to send a message to some, you know, social group or political party and so on.
The Medinsky appointment was all about
yes,
that.
Yes, but if all the government consists of the messages, not bureaucrats, that is very dangerous, because this is a, you know, foundation of this inability to do something of this government. Mm. That's why I think that is the first reason why this government is so not just weak, but very strange. It looks like irregular, you know, Kazakh squadron.
It's the first government ever since I've been looking at governments that I've ever seen that from the very first day of its existence, people were wondering when it was going to get fired. And it hasn't stopped. And we're going to get to that in the second half of the podcast. Before we move on to the second half, I wanted to just throw one more question out there. We're playing with this dichotomy of the deep state and the fake state, right? And when the Putin system worked, the fake state existed to implement the will of the deep state, if you will. And in that sense, it wasn't really fake. It was just the Ministry of Implementation.
But the Ministry of Implementation is still better than Ministry of Truth.
Much better. This served a function, though. This served a function. It gave this facade, going back to the metaphor I used at the very beginning of the podcast, it gave this facade of actual institutions, of an actual parliament that debated and passed laws, an actual government that ran the day-to-day affairs of the country. Without that facade, or with that facade crumbling and cracking and the paint peeling and you're seeing its ugly insides, can the deep state, the collective Putin, Putin's Politburo, whatever you want to call it, can they continue to rule with the mask off like this? Because what's happened and what all of this of what we're talking about is the mask has come off. And we're seeing the ugly innards of the formal state right now. And it's discrediting it. It's turning it into a fake state. It's turning it into a hollow shell. It's creating cynicism. People don't believe the Duma does what parliaments are supposed to do. People don't believe the courts do what courts are traditionally supposed to do. People don't even look at the government as a government. So can the deep state exist without a fake state that doesn't look fake, I guess, is to put it that way? Is this a threat to the deep state?
I think it's the most important threat, the most important, the most dangerous thing which, you know, could happen with the state in Russia. You used an absolutely right word, discredit.
Mm-hmm.
Just the situation is we are now observing the process of discrediting of any or every state institution in Russia. And usually, traditionally in Russian history, you can have various feelings about, you know, Peter the Great or Alexander the Second or even Lenin or Stalin and so on, of course. But traditionally, state was very strong in Russia. That is Russian tradition. And we can explain this because of geography and various things, yeah? But, and the huge, you know, territory mm-hmm. of the country. But anyway, any ruler of Russia, totalitarian, authoritarian, democratic, and so on, understood the importance of a very strong state. Mm-hmm. It could be.
And this was the hallmark of Putin's early rule. He was going to restore the state. Now, he did. He restored the state as a facade to support his, to support his, the leadership of the collective Putin, of the deep state, of the Putin's Politburo, or whatever you want to call it. These things all became tools, but they were strong institutions in reality because and now, for the reasons we just discussed, we're seeing this fail. We're seeing
because we need to deconstruct or, you know, to see, to analyze the material of this facade.
Mm-hmm.
What is it, this facade? You know, you don't remember, you do remember Marquis de Custine with his infamous book, Russia in 1839. Mm-hmm. And the most, famous phrase from the book, Russia is a country of facades.
Mm-hmm.
And facades are very important in Russia, mm-hmm. very important.
Potemkin villages. Yes.
Yes, are very important in Russia. And usually the material for this facade was still has to be ideological. Because
mm-hmm.
all these Russian facades, they're ideological ones. It was, Orthodox Church and monarchy during the imperial times. It was, you know, Marxism, Leninism, mm-hmm. and so on. It was nationalism during the Alexander III and so on. Now, Putin and his, Kremlin administration, all these political so-called experts and so on, they don't have any material for this facade.
Yeah, that's clear.
That is the first, my first point. And the second point, this is that you could be totalitarian politic, you could be authoritarian, democratic, whoever, but you cannot be cynical politician.
At least not visibly.
Yes. Oh, of course, you must be cynical if you are a politician.
If you're a politician, by definition,
yes,
you must be cynical.
Yes, cynical, but
you
cannot be,
appear to be.
You cannot be in the eyes of the
society.
Well,
this pushes the metaphor. The facade is off. The mask is coming off.
So this is, like pornography instead of, love.
I knew you were going to get pornography in here somehow. In a few moments, we'll continue our discussion and look at a mysterious video that appeared online this week attacking Dmitry Medvedev, which has set tongues wagging yet again about the prime minister's future. I'd like to remind you that you are listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFARL. In the studio with me is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin of RFARL's Russian Service. I'd also like to remind you, you can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes. You could read the Power Vertical blog at rferl.org. And you can follow us on Twitter at Power Vertical.
Люди увидели. Дмитрий Медведев пожертвовал как пешками Каддафи, ливийцами, российскими интересами. Он цинично
сыграл Россию. Cynically sold out Russia's interests in the Middle East when he implicitly backed NATO's air campaign against Libyan strongman Muammar Gaddafi, and did so against the express wishes of Vladimir Putin. The video was on what appears to be the YouTube page of Deputy Prime Minister Dmitry Rogozin. For his part, Rogozin denies any connection to the video, which looks strikingly like another documentary that came out last August criticizing Medvedev's indecisiveness in the 2008 war with Georgia. Kirill, we've been down this road before. In fact, I think we go down it almost every week on the podcast talking about Medvedev's political future. But
he's our favorite politician.
We can't help it. Things keep popping up. Another attack on Medvedev, and this one pretty high profile. And just like the August 2012 video about the Georgian war, this one has people speculating for the umpteenth time about his imminent sacking. I'm not sure if that's the case. Again, we discussed this a lot. We say, you know, he's useful to Putin. He'll get sacked only at the opportune moment. What do you see going on here? Is this more fake state shenanigans? I mean, this YouTube page certainly looked like it was really Rogozin's YouTube page. He denied it on Twitter. He said he had nothing to do with it. Somebody's out to get Medvedev. This was a slickly produced video quoting top generals, top experts on the Middle East. There's clearly a bit of money behind it. You don't produce one of these things cheap. It was over an hour long. What's going on? I mean, we have another campaign to discredit Medvedev.
First of all, let's focus not on the figure of Dmitry Medvedev, but on the figure of Dmitry Rogozin. That is very interesting. Mm. Because as we discussed in the last podcast and tried to discuss and discussed in this one, the most politicians and bureaucrats in the Russian government and Russian Duma and so on, they are not real politicians and bureaucrats. They are either messages, as we told, or functions.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, Dmitry Rogozin is a function. Yes, he is a function.
What is his function? What kind of a function is he?
He is kind of. I'm very sorry, Mr. Rogozin, but
you don't have to apologize.
Yes,
to these
yes,
people.
I'm very sorry, Mr. Rogozin, but it's a role of freak. he played a role of a freak even in the beginning of 2000 when he established this nationalist moderate nationalist movement with Sergei Glazyev. Do
he
you
has
remember?
A very serious job. Then I agree with you. Right now he has a very, very serious job. He's in charge of defense procurement.
Yes, but who told you that freak couldn't be ahead of some Russian ministry today?
Not just some Russian ministry. We're talking about defense procurement. We're talking about huge money. We're talking about the military-industrial complex, that therefore we're talking about huge power in Russia. And Rogozin is the chief point man on this.
That was a very interesting, and still is a very interesting example, when a freak turns up as a function. Oh, freakiness.
I'll let you go. I'm not even going to interrupt you. Go on.
when they picked up Rogozin as head of this procurement, you know, defense, everything, and so on, that was because of the situation around Serdyukov.
Mm-hmm.
Serdyukov, of course, he could be corruption.
But he was interested in purchasing foreign armaments.
And he was interested in reforms.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very important. Of course, I'm not sure that he was, you know, kind of corruption and so on. But anyway, at the same time, it's a very Russian situation. At the same time, he was interested in reforms.
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to do some. And he made several.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this line political behavior was disgusting for some old school Russian generals.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Putin, who is very sensitive for such, you know, signals from the side of army and so on, he tried to send them a clear message.
About, and that message was Rogozin.
Yes, and this message, and that's why I'm speaking about a freak who is, you know, turning up as a message.
Yeah, but if he's a freak, and I'm not sure, I'm not sure I'd go there. But I mean, I'll let you have that. But his stock is rising in the elite. He's become very powerful. He was one of the key people that got Serdyukov removed. What he was lobbying for on behalf of the generals and the domestic defense industry was that Russia shouldn't be buying these foreign not just Mistrals, but foreign armaments in general. They should be buying Russian.
That will be the end of Russian army.
Well, we had this discussion with Mark Galeotti a couple of weeks ago when we discussed Shoigu. But why this video against Medvedev? And again, Rogozin's denying this. But I took a close look at that website, and it looks pretty legit. I mean, it's not some website that was set up yesterday. It has a lot of videos on there. They're all about defense procurement and buying Russian armaments and the Russian army's back and things like that. It says, under Dmitry Rogozin's name, it says Deputy Prime Minister of the Russian Federation. It's funny, with a on YouTube, you have to list your employer, and it says the Russian state. but I mean, the website certainly to me looked like it belonged to Rogozin. But whether or not it's his, somebody from that sphere of the Russian political elite is certainly after Medvedev. Whether it's going to be successful in getting rid of him is another question entirely. But what's going on here? I mean, you seem to see Rogozin's hand behind this.
I think it's a provocation, and I think this is an attack not against Medvedev. It's an attack against Rogozin.
Mm-hmm.
Because such level of provocation, it's very serious gesture, yeah? And, of course, such things, they have to be prepared thoroughly.
We're through the looking glass here into the Russian mirror world.
Yes, and that's why I'm not a supporter of conspiracy theories, but I can imagine that some people launched this YouTube channel several months ago.
Made it look like just, it was really...
Yes, just to do this thing, in the beginning of January. Yes,
interesting.
Because if you launch this YouTube channel, just yesterday...
Oh, no. It'd be obvious. You can look at anybody with any experience in the internet could look at it and say this was just set up yesterday.
Sure. So, having in mind that the struggle inside Russian elite is very, very serious, and it connected with the billions and billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So I can imagine that someone just paid $10,000 to just please do this and this and this and this. And that's all. Mm-hmm. It's not, so it's not very complicated.
But it hurts Medvedev. It hurts Medvedev.
It hurts as a first step. The secondly,
it comes right after Medvedev said he'd someday like to run for president again. Remember in his interview with Bloomberg, or he didn't rule out.
I'm just sure that he'll never return as a president.
Of course not. But it doesn't. My point is, it's not happening in a vacuum. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yes, maybe this is a provocation attack, attack both on Rogozin and
Medvedev
at
the same time,
by chance.
They're
by
on opposite
chance.
Sides
yes.
of the
Yes,
elite.
It's a famous Chikiski krюк.
Right.
Yes, and it's a hook to hook, hook up.
To do something this sophisticated, whose hand you'd have to see?
this is such
There's only one political operative in Russia who is that sophisticated, I think.
I'm Fratkov.
Who might that be? Anyway, go on.
Anyway, I think that's a lot of things. They are happening just by itself, not just with some very very important strategic plan, but just maybe then these things could be useful in chance in the future.
Right.
Let's try to do this, and this, and this.
But this never happened under Putin. The whole thing, Putin. We don't air our dirty laundry in public. We solve our problems behind closed doors. The state presents a public facade, again to use that word, of unity. You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of late Yeltsin. It reminds me of late Yeltsin. Remember the человек, который похож на Скуратовья, and all of that. The person who looks like the general prosecutor Скуратов. All of these crazy videos that were appearing. There wasn't YouTube in those days, but they were appearing on Channel One. but this is what this looks like. This is what the elite and the elite in those days was ripped apart at the seams through the latter part of the Yeltsin presidency.
That's why we are speaking about the decline. That is not the beginning. This is, a decline in a full swing. It looks like not just, late Yeltsin's years. It looks like last 2-3 years of Nicholas II. Mm. With all the scandals without Rasputin, I can imagine Rasputin on YouTube. Yes?
Rasputin on YouTube. Now, yes. That is
very interesting, intriguing, adventurous. Speaking seriously, that is very dangerous. That is all these things are, they could seem, funny and so on. But really, it's very dangerous because state, as we told, say state is a very important, plays very important role in Russian life. It's not, United Kingdom. Where is a good tradition of, civil society or community
institutions strong,
and so on. So
strong,
we're speaking about the country with the, in which horizontal ties of the society had been destroyed twice in 20th century. Yeah. And that is very, very important, and that is very dangerous. And that's why let's return to the beginning of our podcast. That's why I said that the most important danger or threat to Russian state now is Russian state.
So we've come full circle. I mean, it's almost, we come full circle from the chaos of the late 90s to the chaos of 2013. It's almost Putin restored the state, and now it's the facade is crumbling again. Unfortunately, appears to be crumbling again. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. I'd like to remind you that you have been listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin of RFERL's Russian service. Thanks for the great discussion, Kirill.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank our brilliant producer, Tanya Kancheva, and my indispensable colleague, Pavel Butorin, proprietor of the equally indispensable Twitter feed, Russia Police Watch, which you can and should follow at Rus Police Watch. I'd also like to remind you can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes. You can read the Power Vertical blog at rferl.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at Power Vertical. Join us again next week. Kirill will be off until February 22nd, but I'll be on the lookout for some qualified co-hosts to fill his very big shoes. And now I leave you with the ambient sounds of my favorite socially conscious Russian rapper, Noise MC.